I like cream in my coffee, and I like to sleep late on Sunday, and nobody knows me like my baby.
I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator on 630 KHOW, Denver's talk station. You're with us on The Caring Generation, focusing on the conversation of caring, giving us permission to talk about aging, the challenges of caregiving, and everything in between. Whether you're a caregiver or a person needing care facing an unexpected situation, or if you're interested in education to help you live a healthier and more informed life, you're in the right place with me every Sunday from 10 to noon. Our website, thecaringgeneration.com, features more than 2 years' worth of top 10 tip sheets and all of our past programs free for you to listen and share with others. Visit thecaringgeneration.com. How many of you are clear about the care or limits of care you'd want at the end of your life? Artificial nutrition or feeding tubes are a common question on end-of-life documents. Are you informed or educated enough to make sure that you would make a good decision? Dr. William Toffler is professor and director of the Medical Student Education Section of the Department of Family Medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. He's also co-founder and national director of Physicians for Compassionate Care Education Foundation, a nonprofit organization that promotes compassionate care for severely ill patients without sanctioning or assisting in their suicide. He's committed to defending the long-standing medical prohibition against doing harm while working actively to promote compassion care at the end of life. Dr. Toffler is frequently invited to speak about these and other medical ethical issues at both regional and national conferences. Dr. Toffler, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be on with you.
Thanks. For persons who don't know what a feeding tube is, would you explain the purpose and how it's placed in the body?
Sure. The purpose is to give people the caloric and nutritional support, protein, fats, carbohydrates, all that we need to sustain life. And often they're used in situations where a person can't swallow without potentially aspirating or choking on their own contents of saliva and food that they're trying to ingest. So the utility of the tube is very great in such situations, and that is not uncommon after people have serious illnesses, especially as we age, and the control of simple functions that we don't even think about generally that happen almost automatically, that is swallowing, become problematic.
Can you give an example of a health condition that a person might experience where a feeding tube might be recommended?
Well, sure. There are times after a surgical procedure, anesthesia, where a person doesn't regain function with swallowing or even the motility of their bowels, and they have to have supplemental nutrition in order to keep from essentially going into a starvation mode. In addition to feeding tubes, I mean, people can be fed parenterally through the veins, intravenously through central lines. And again, these are life-saving if people are having trouble. For instance, if a bowel doesn't wake up, you might have to have intravenous feeding for a time, and then as the bowel function is recaptured, you can then transition back to oral feeding as you enjoyed all your life. The same is true if a person can't swallow. Often you'll have speech or swallowing evaluations that show that the person really can't ingest food safely without it going into their airway, which then could cause an aspiration pneumonia or pneumonitis, which can be a real setback. So at times it's life-giving to be able to use this as a bridge to return the function when there is problems with swallowing. And obviously this is also true with some debilitating illnesses that are progressive without necessarily something on the other end, such as Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS. And individuals may choose to have this kind of support or may not, depending on their own outlook and their own desires in terms of what kind of support they're willing to accept.
For a person who's got swallowing problems and they've had a feeding tube put in, is it ever possible for those swallowing problems to resolve and the feeding tube to be removed?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that would be the majority of cases. Even people who'd had difficulty from a stroke, that function often over the course of days, weeks, occasionally months, will improve. often, you know, as doctors are pretty good at diagnosing problems, but not necessarily very good at prognosticating whether or not a function will return. And with the proper care and support, especially if someone's in a rundown state, they can have a remarkable return of function.
And in your opinion, why do families struggle so much over the decision of, do we put in a feeding tube, do we not?
Well, the reality is that we can't be sure. Is this a progressive condition where, you know, very close to the end of life, and it's really just prolonging what is an inevitable act of dying, and that is something that, you know, would not be a bridge to place a feeding tube. In fact, the feeding tube can do harm. It's very different depending on the person's state of life. My mother for years talked about just wanting to be able to let God take me, and you know, as it became progressively difficult to feed her, it was very clear what her own wishes would be to let the natural end of life come. On the other hand, my father was a World War II veteran and fought in Korea and Vietnam, and you know, I know why we won World War II. He was willing to try no matter how low the odds would be to try something. And if there was even a 2% chance, I knew my dad would want to try to take it. And so even though he had advanced Parkinson's disease and had a serious illness and surgery and debilitation, it was a no-brainer for me that he would want to have a gastrostomy tube with the effort to try to regain his swallowing function. We did put a gastrostomy tube in my dad, which worked fine for a while. And then actually, you know, it came out and was replaced in the wrong place, inadvertently, a medical error, and caused a great deal of harm in that the tube feeding went into the abdomen instead of the stomach. And ultimately, you know, my dad passed away from that complication. So, you know, feeding tubes are not without downsides, but you know, having said that, I know that I would do it the same thing again. You know, obviously the issue of tube placement needs to be verified, and that was the problem, not the fact that we used a feeding tube. So I don't want anyone listening to have a sense of feeding tubes have no utility. They certainly do. On the other hand, there are complications, and if a person has a progressive illness, it is possible that the tube can do more harm than good, and may not at all enhance or even prolong life.
And when you say do more harm than good, what would those complications be?
Well, I mean, we've mentioned the aspiration, which is probably the most common thing that not only happens when you swallow, but also can happen with tube placement. In other words, a person can have reflux, just like many Americans do, and the reality is that food can come up and go down the wrong path because the person doesn't have a normal cough reflex, doesn't have the ability to tell that they need to close the glottis and keep from getting it in the airway. So that happens with tubes. But just obviously if the tube is placed in the right place and there's not overfeeding, that risk isn't huge, but it can happen. People place tubes in the jejunum, far down in the small intestine, or past the first segment, past the stomach, so there's less likelihood of that, depending on the tube placement. Again, it doesn't guarantee it, but that's one of the most frequent complications. And then, you know, the tube placement, as happened with my dad, is obviously an issue, especially if you're using a tube that has just been put in freshly. It hasn't developed a track from the outside world to the stomach that's guaranteed. So if you have to replace the tube within the first, say, 3 months of its placement, it ought to be checked in terms of the placement with an x-ray and gastrographin so you know it's in the right place. And that's the kind of thing that can be a problem, especially as what happened was my dad was in a different hospital system where they didn't know it was a fresh tube, and he wasn't in a state of mind with the admission to be able to clearly tell them that history. And so we ended up with a complication. And so everything, you know, is like a two-edged sword. It has a wonderful aspect of being able to provide nutrition and be a bridge. On the other hand, it can be a real problem if you experience one of these complications.
One more question. Let's say a family does have a loved one at end of life. How do they make that decision to put a feeding tube in or not?
Well, it can be a difficult decision, and that's why it's helpful, obviously, to have talked about these kind of eventualities and get a sense of philosophy. As I said, I had no difficulty knowing. I knew my parents well. They were actually living with me at the time, and what their desires would be. So talking about, you know, philosophy of life and intervention, tube feeding is not a highly technical intervention that requires a great deal of sophistication, nor is it very expensive. I mean, tube feeding is not an expensive entity. It's probably less than going out to eating at a fast food restaurant in terms of each meal. At the same time, it is an intervention. We're not required, you know, any religion I know of, to die with tubes in place. And so understanding that, you know, if it's a short-term issue and you definitely need this, it would enhance your recovery from surgery, and then it's obviously a good thing. And at the same time, if a person's close to death, like one of my neighbors had pancreatic cancer, it's almost inevitably a fatal disease with the type of pancreatic cancer he had. So he got his affairs in order, and he saw no need to try to prolong his life with enteral nutrition through a feeding tube or otherwise. And he chose to be at home and not have those kinds of interventions, even though they're relatively simple and not complex. And that's perfectly okay, too. So knowing the person's wishes is the first thing. And then I think the second thing, obviously, is to have a sense of, really, is this the gain, in the case of a person who's, you know, close to death, is the gain worth the effort? Is it really going to make a person more comfortable? Is it really going to give enhanced quality of life or comfort? And, you know, if the answer is no, then I think then it shouldn't be done. If the answer is yes, I think the intervention is relatively simple, and sometimes can give people time to think about what the long-term answer should be. So it can be a bridge even for people to be able to come and be present at death and be with their loved one. And then the idea of accepting the inevitable end of life is okay, and withdrawal of support at the end of life is not actively ending their life, and it's not something that can't be done away with. But again, it's so simple that if it's not causing problems, I think it's something that people can and should entertain.
Dr. Toffler, I thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to be on the show, Pamela, and wish you well.
Thank you. Listeners, if you want to learn more, you can visit Physicians for Compassionate Care. Their website is pccef.org, pccef.org. I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator on Talk Radio 630 KHOW. You're with me on The Caring Generation, navigating life's transitions with dignity, clarity, and stability. Our program's not limited by time zone or location. Your out-of-town friends, family members, and loved ones can listen each week by visiting khow.com and clicking on the Listen Live button. Up next, our Caring Controversy of the Week.